Happy Mother's Day! Happy Mother's Day to all the mommies out there in the world that I know are listening. I want to say I love you. You are appreciated. You are loved. We are grateful for you. You are a superhuman and a regular human all at the same time. I hope you had a little bit of time for just yourself to do whatever it is you wanted or needed to do for you. I hope you also got calls and texts and emails and social media messages and face-to-face hugs and kisses if possible. I hope you were able to receive as much love as possible to show other people's appreciation for you for being a mom. It is one of the greatest gifts in the world to be a mother, and also one of the hardest gifts in the world to be a mother, but it's worth it. It's like, you know, you get to have these beautiful humans, teach them, raise them, love them, and eventually you have to let them go. But even with letting them go at the different stages of their lives, you still get to love them unconditionally, and that's dope. That's hella dope. So I want to give all of the moms a hand clap. Clap, 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 clap. And okay, let me see if I can do it. There you go. I want to give all the moms a hand clap to let you know you're doing a great job. It's literally second by second, minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year. It is a progress. It is a journey. And sometimes certain situations make you feel like life is moving in slow motion. And then other situations make you feel like it's moving too fast. I am, of course, a single mom of four kids. I have two boys and two girls. My oldest son is now 16. My oldest daughter is now 15. My youngest son will be 13 later this year. And my youngest daughter will be 10 later this year. So all of my kids by the end of this year will be double digit children. Two teens and two preteens. So it's moving fast. And there were moments, like I said, felt like, oh God, I'm being tortured. It's taking so long to get to the next place. But I was always very grateful. I always knew I wanted to be a mom. So I'm appreciative of what I have and what I don't have in the moments that I've shared with my babies. I also want to put out there, with all that positivity and the love and gratefulness and appreciative spirit, that Mother's Day has always been a tough day for me. It was like bittersweet because my mom passed away when I was four. So I don't really have any conscious memories of her. All I know of her is what people choose to tell me. Sometimes I'll ask certain family members questions about my mom, and they repeat the same things over and over, or they just choose not to divulge. Very well so, because it could be hard for them. They don't remember. They don't want to remember. They probably didn't have a good experience with her, or they probably did have a great experience with her. So they share what they can. But I personally don't have any conscious memories of her with her. So it's kind of hard for me. Being a mom, I get to love on my kids. My kids get to show me love. And they know I love them unconditionally. And I never had that growing up. No matter what you do, your mama got your back. Or even if she don't got your back, even if she be like, you fucked up on this one. You tripping. She still loves you. That unconditional feeling of love. I never had that. So it is usually a very bittersweet day for me, Mother's Day. American Mother's Day and Haitian Mother's Day. Because as you all know, I am Haitian. So the last Sunday of every May is Haitian Mother's Day. So I get to celebrate twice, or get celebrated twice, but yeah, it's always a bittersweet day for me because of that. But over the years, I've learned how to remove the negative from it and look at the positive in this situation, where even though I did miss out on having a mom, I'm grateful that I did have women role models growing up. Some were bad, some were good, but nonetheless, I had them to learn from. So I'm very much appreciative of that. And I want to let you know that if you never had your mother raise you, or maybe you did have her and you lost her at a young age, or you had her throughout your life and she was a horrible mom. Whatever your story may be, I want to tell you that I'm appreciative of you, that you've made it this far in your life with or without a mom. Based on the circumstances and situations, I am grateful and appreciative that you're here. You are important. You are loved. And I'm happy that you've made it this far. And excuse me. And also, for those people that, you know, were raised by grandmothers and aunties and friends or whoever raised you was that mother figure in your life, I'm thankful that they were there to pick up the pieces for you and to add to the love that you may have already been receiving. So Mother's Day is very intense. It's a very loving day, and I'm appreciative of it, and I'm appreciative of all the people that are able to participate in it. For the mommies to be, first-time mothers, whether you are just finding out you're pregnant, you're good along in your pregnancy, or you just had your first baby, it's real. This roller coaster ride is very real. I ain't gonna hold you. Like, it's very real, and it's not necessarily to be feared, but definitely to be respected, and to understand the reality that comes with being a mother. It's real. I don't know what other word to use, but it's real as hell. The first time I looked at my oldest son when he came out, it was just like, damn, all that fuss for you. You're so awesome though. Like, you're so tiny but so awesome, and you're just so great, and you're so weird looking, but I think I still like you though. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love everything about you. You nasty though. You dirty. Mind you, I was 19 turning 20 when I had my first son. So it was mixed thoughts, mixed emotions. But it was just beautiful. And within the first 24 hours, I would say 12 hours to be honest. Within the first 12 up to 12 to 24 hours of his life, my motherhood was already tested. I was pregnant with my firstborn, found out I was pregnant, and made sure, double checked, you know, did pregnancy tests, came out negative, so I did blood work, and came out positive. I told the father, he said he was fully aware, he knew what he did, so the journey began. Family was very disappointed in me. You know, being raised in a strict Haitian Christian household, family was disappointed, but you know, it is what it is. Here we are. Slowly but surely, they all came around. Everything was cool. Towards the end of the pregnancy, I was in and out of an abusive relationship, not with the biological father of my child, but with a gentleman that I got with early in my pregnancy. He knew it wasn't his child. He knew I was pregnant, and he was 1,000% okay with it. And at that time, he was a great guy. But the relationship did become abusive. But I eventually left the relationship. Towards the end of that, when I was almost due, I was telling my sister, I called her one day while I was at work, boohoo crying. And she was like, what's wrong? You okay? Are you having pain? She was like, I was like, no, I can't do this. I can't push this baby out. And she's like, kind of too late for that. Like, the baby can't go nowhere else but out at this point. So, you know, she talked me through, because my sister was already a mom at that time. She actually had the day my son was born, the next day my nephew turned one. So my nephew and my son are a year and a day apart. But she was like, yeah, there's nowhere else for him to go but out, so you kind of pass that. So she talked me down, whatever. So it's time to go. I have my baby, and I'm going through all the emotions. I'm happy, I'm crying, I'm staring at him. He didn't want to take on to breastfeeding. And the nurses, like, a lot of times it's hard at first, and, you know, sometimes some babies just don't take it. They just don't want it. And I was like, but, you know, I really want to try. And they were like, that's fine. Take your time. Don't push it. I definitely had the milk. He just wasn't, he didn't care, you know, so it is what it is. So, you know, in the L&D room, labor and delivery room, you got the baby inside that little clear basket thingy that's right next to you on the bed, so you can always reach over, check on them. You can look through the clear basket and look at them, check on them, you know, always just sit up, pick them up, boom, hold your baby. So I would do that every now and then, every couple of minutes, try to breastfeed him. And he just went with it. So I was like, all right, it is what it is. So I called the nurse and I told him, you know, well, let's go ahead and try Enfamil. It's been a couple hours. He hasn't eaten. So let's try formula. And the formula they had at that time at the hospital was Enfamil. So that's why I specified and said, bring me the Enfamil. So she was like, okay, they were doing a switch, like a nurse switch. So I guess when the switch is done, they'll go ahead and, you know, bring the Enfamil. And I was like, okay, whatever, I ain't tripping. So he threw up while he was in the bin. And it was like a bunch of green stuff. And I was like, you know, mind you, 19 turning 20, so I'm still a whole child. And ew, this is green stuff. I don't care what age you are, green stuff is nasty when you throw it up or if you poop it out. This green stuff is nasty. So I call the nurse's station. I know they're doing the switch out because I just spoke to them. And I was like, I know you guys are doing your shifts change. So I just wanted to let you guys know the baby just threw up and threw up some green stuff. And they're like, okay, we'll make sure to have somebody check on it. Check your chart. When was the last time the baby ate? I said, oh, no, he hasn't eaten. He was like, since when? Since birth. He hasn't eaten anything. Whoever that nurse was I spoke to hung up that phone on me so quick and ran to my room. So when she got there, I think she must have talked to some nurses on the way because a couple of nurses started spilling in legit like 5 to 10 seconds after her. And I'm like, what's going on? So when they look at they turn on the light in the room, look at the baby, and then they look at me, obviously having no clue what the fuck going on. They said, man, we're going to have to take the baby. We'll be right back. I immediately went into instinct mode. I said, the fuck? No. What do you mean? That's not happening. Who does that? Who takes a baby? So you gotta take a baby. And they don't say nothing. So as they're walking out, you know, I grab my little IV pole, get up out the bed, and I follow them. And when I follow them, I follow them into the NICU, the newborn intensive care unit. My heart immediately dropped to my stomach. Even telling the story now, my heart dropped to my stomach. And I know what ICU is. So NICU is just ICU for little babies, for newborn babies. And man, it was, I can't even describe the feeling. You just came out of my body, but now my body is about to shut down. Because something is wrong with you. I don't know what it is. Nobody's told me anything. They've grabbed you, put you in here. And, you know, obviously I couldn't go in. But it's it's just like in the movies. How when you see them walk up to that glass where they can see through and see the babies on the baskets. That's exactly how my NICU was, where I was at. And so when they walked through the door, of course, I couldn't walk in behind them, but I was able to see through the glass. And they just started putting IVs everywhere in my baby. And I'm just staring through the mirror. I'm crying, but it wasn't one of those, you know, like screaming cries. It was just tears falling down my face as I'm trying to focus my brain to watch what's going on. I guess one of the nurses noticed me at the window, so they closed the blinds and somebody came out to talk to me, and they were like, you know, if the baby hasn't eaten, it's been a few hours, the baby should have eaten, but if the baby didn't eat and they're throwing up, then most likely they're throwing up the walls, like acid type of this situation. She said she doesn't know if that's what it is or what's going on, but they're going to check for me. So I said, okay. And I turned back around and faced the window. And I said, put the blinds up so I can see. And they're like, man, we can't allow that. I was like, well, I'm not going nowhere. So one of the nurse that was talking to me was a black nurse. It was a black woman. Listen, black woman, we are everything. Everything. So one of the head nurses, charge nurses, I'm not sure what the proper term is, was a white woman at the desk. She was like, I'll just call security. And the nurse looked at her and said, for what? No, you will not call security. So then she talked to me, and, you know, she basically was trying to convince me to go back to the room. I said, I'll be fine sitting here. Even if you don't put the blinds up for me to see, I understand you got shit to do, but I'm not moving. When my son moves is when I move. If he's here, then I'm here. So she got me a chair, sat by the window. Of course, they didn't put the blinds up, but sat by the window. And she was like, I can tell, you know, your nerves and stuff are bad. So we need to get you back on the monitor, make sure your heart rate and stuff is good. So she takes me to the room and, you know, hooks me back up to everything. And she was like, I'll take this pill. You know, to help you relax a little bit. She said, I'm not gonna lie to you, it may make you a little sleepy, but it'll help relax you because your blood pressure is obviously with reason up. I was like, okay, I'll take it. I know you want me to just shut up and sit down right now so you guys can focus on the baby and not have to worry about me if I go into goddamn cardiac arrest, have a heart attack. I know what it is. So she just looked at me and smiled. She gave me a little pill. I don't know what kind of pill it was. I remember it was blue. I drank it and... That shit was goddamn tranquilizer. I fell asleep immediately. And when I woke up, it was a whole mid-afternoon another day. So, my motherhood, my morals, my values, my spiritual relationship, everything came all at once in this moment. And when I woke up from my Sleeping Beauty slumber, you know, I just prayed. I said, God, you would not give me my son to take him from me. Not me. I understand these are things that happen at times with different people for different reasons. But I won't accept it for me. So everything you do is with purpose. So you can go ahead and figure this out. Because my son will not leave this earth just as he came into it. Love you, God. Signing out. Take care of my son and bring him back to me. That is literally what my prayer was. I don't think I pray like everybody else. I talk to God. It's a conversation. So, sometimes, of course. And in that moment, like, the lion in me just came out all at once. I've always been an intellectual person. I've always been very smart, and I've always been, you know, priding myself in that. So, you know, I got up, I went to the nursing station. I said, a doctor needs to come see me within the next 30 minutes. I don't care what he's doing. I don't care if he's even performing surgery on my child. Within the next 30 minutes, a doctor, not a nurse, needs to come to me and explain to me what's happening. If not, we're going to turn this into a legal matter. Because it's been almost 24 hours. And I do not know what's going on with my son. Please do not excuse my age and who I am and what I look like as an excuse to think you're just going to do things without my consent or without my knowledge. So within an hour, there was a doctor in there to talk to me. And they explained to me what was going on. My baby had GBS, group blood strep, and of course I didn't know what it meant at the time. So as soon as he said it, I said, what is GBS? He said, group blood strep. I said, what is group blood strep? And he told me, I said, I need to be able to see it somewhere. So he said, I'll have a nurse print it out, but I'm still gonna explain it to you. I said, cool. So he explained it to me with all his great medical terminology and knowledge. Didn't understand the shit he was saying. They sent me the printout, which I still have to this day. They sent me the printout, and I read it. And the way I understood it was, now it's been 16 years, so hopefully I remember this accurately, so I'm not speaking inaccurately. But the way I remember it was, I guess during testing, like when you're pregnant, there was a test that they did not do because I had pregnancy Medicaid. And since pregnancy Medicaid in the state of Florida did not make it mandatory to test for this, I did not get tested. So therefore we were not aware. So therefore this is what happened. It was something in relative to my blood being Rh negative and not matching with my son. So he rejected it. And I'm not, do not quote me on this. I would have to go look at it. and that's how he ended up getting sick, getting the blood strep. I know the statistics was like crazy wild. It was like 1 out of 100,000 or a million kids or something like that die from it. My baby was almost the one. So he was fighting for his life. Not even a full day old. My baby was fighting for his life. I'm a first time birth mother, and I'm watching my baby fight for his life. God is so awesome, and he's so real, and he's so great, because he's gonna build up something in you that you didn't even know was in you that you're going to need. Not just for that child, but for your other children, for other people's children, for other people, for yourself. And man, let me tell you, that was a rough month. He was born, and less than 12 hours of his birth, he was fighting for his life. And he was fighting for it for a whole month. He came home a month later. Well, a month and a week later, and my birthday had passed. I had just turned 20 by the time he finally got home. The motherhood strength continued. My baby, as you can imagine, with all the different, you know, things they were doing to him, poking him. And he had IVs everywhere. Oh, man. He had IVs in his head, in his neck, in his body. He had IVs anywhere, everywhere. And I remember people were saying, you know, did you want to take a picture so you can, you know, have memory, you know, remember these moments? And I was like, I wouldn't need one. I can close my eyes and tell you every single place that my baby had IVs in. And even if I were to get amnesia or later on in life get Alzheimer's, that's not one of the things I want to make sure I have a picture of to remember. So, but yeah, so most likely he was pumped up with all them drugs. You know, that's what hospitals do. They pump you up with drugs. And so when he came home, I didn't realize it then. But as I got older in life, as a mom with multiple children and just my own experiences in hospitals, or in my own experiences, even in the streets with drugs, with not me, but with, you know, dealing with people in the streets with drugs. He was suffering from withdrawal. So he came home and cried 2 months straight. He was born in January. He came home late February. He cried up until April, May, every day, 2 months straight. For 2 hours, from 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. every day, for 2 months straight. Oh my God. Mind you, I did not know that he was most likely suffering from withdrawal from all the medication he was on for a whole month at the hospital while he was fighting for his life. So he's just crying, and you know, one thing people always say, babies cry a lot. So I'm just thinking this is just a baby cry a lot situation. He's just a very scheduled baby. He likes to cry a lot from 2 to 4 every day. So after a couple of days of this, of course, I got prepared. So I'm like, all right, make sure I wake up early, have a warm bath running for him, have clean clothes that smell good and they're warm out the dryer for him, and clean diaper, warm diaper as well. So what I would do is I would take the clothes out of the dryer, and you know, right before I put the clothes on him, and I would put the brand new diaper in the midst of all the clothes, so when I put the diaper on him, it's warm. So the towel that I wrap him in out the shower, out the bath, is warm. The diaper I put on him is warm. The clothes I put on him is warm. And then my baby was a burrito baby. You had to wrap him up tight like a burrito, where only his head was sticking out. that's what he liked to, that's how he liked to be, to sleep. So I would wrap him tight in that warm blanket and hold him tight. You know, as I was naked, my top was naked, so we can have the skin to skin from his face and his chest. So I would make the burrito where his face, neck, and chest was open so that we can do skin to skin. And, you know, after a while, from 2 to 4, he was crying, but he was just crying out of routine. He wasn't in pain. He wasn't hungry. Of course, I forgot to add, I would have food ready for him as well. So I would make his schedule so that it went around the time between 2 to 4 he's actually hungry, so he will eat. Mind you, once again, I did not know that he was dealing with withdrawal from all the medications. I'm just knowing people tell me babies cry, so I'm gonna try my best to make my baby comfortable coming from the hospital, being home with mommy. So I made his schedule so that between 2 and 4 is time, is feeding time. He, by the time he got home, he did breastfeed, but he just didn't take as much. And mind you, all of my pregnancies, I have 4 kids, I was super engorged after giving birth because I produced too much milk every day, all day. So it was so painful. So the fact that he wasn't wanting to drink it, I was dying. But it didn't matter that I had a high fever and that I was getting sick, and I would get better and get sick again because the milk, it was so painful. I had milk pods under my arms. It didn't matter because my baby is crying. He's sad or he's hurt, and I need to make him feel better. Motherhood journey. This is like the first 4 months in, guys. So that's what we would do. And as the 2 months was coming to, you know, coming to an end, I noticed the 2 to 4, he didn't always wake up. I was still doing the routine because, hell, I don't know that it's about to end. I'm doing my routine the way I've set it up. Because even when I would hold him skin to skin with all warm, clean clothes and blankets and diapers and all that and warm, good food, you know, he would eat. And when he was done eating, I would burp, and he would burp, he'll cry. And it was tough because he would cry while he was eating. So I had to be careful that he wouldn't choke. He would cry while he was burping, so I had to be careful that he wouldn't choke or throw up. And then when he was done, he would cry some more. From 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. Oh my God. It was horrid. It was just tough. It was tough. But we got through. Me and my baby got through. And eventually, after 2 months passed, he was okay. He didn't wake up as much. Or if he did, it was regular fussy stuff. Diaper need to be changed. Wipe him down. Change him. And he would go back to sleep. So, he was born in January. Almost 9. Actually, he did. They had a moment where he didn't have a pulse. So, I guess medically, technically, he did die at one point. But fighting for his life for a month. Came home at the end of February. All of March, all of April, towards the beginning of May, he, you know, was going through it. And by my first Mother's Day, he was, you know, relatively fine. The crying 2 to 4 slowed down. It stopped happening. And he was just a beautiful, bouncy, chubby, joyous baby. He was almost 4 months. He was like 3.5 months at that point. And my baby had went through what would have been, to date, one of the toughest times of his life. He was fighting for his life. And as a mom of a 1, 2, 3 month baby, 3 month old baby, all you can do is provide the love, pray, hold him, talk to him. I've never been a baby talker. When it comes to babies, human babies, I probably do it to my puppies, but I never baby talk to my kids. I always talk to them. How are you feeling? What's up? What's going on? Why are you crying? Why are you mad? Are you sad? Oh, you look happy. I'm so happy you're happy. I talk to my kids. So, you know, that's all I was doing. I was praying over him, praying for him, praying with him. I was talking to him. I would hold him, like I said, skin to skin. Even when he wasn't crying at 2 to 4, when he'd be up playing, I'd make sure we do hold skin to skin, laugh with him, talk to him, sing to him. And I can't sing. That probably was torture. But, you know, so you know, the beginning of my motherhood journey showed me that you're doing the best you can, and the best you can is exactly what's needed. That's exactly the dosage of what that baby needs, because it's coming from you. That's it. Each journey, because it's multiple journeys, each journey you go through with your kids, just be there. Listen. Talk to them. Love on them. Discipline them. Set boundaries. Set limits. Teach them. They need the understanding, they need the knowledge, they need the wisdom, they need the love, they need the discipline, they need it all. And they need it from you. They need it from you, they need it from their fathers, grandparents, aunties, uncles, cousins, friends, you know, as life goes on, of course, their significant others. They need it. They need all of those things. But in the beginning, they need it from you. They were in you for 9 months, and then they came out of you. They came out of you and then onto you, all right, onto your chest, whether you got them dirty or whether you had them cleaned up first. They need it from you. So the best that you're doing or that you can do is exactly what they need. And it's okay. It is a process. It is a journey. And I'm so happy that you decided to take on this journey. I'm so thankful and I'm so appreciative. And they are too. Even if they've never had the chance to tell you, or they just haven't told you yet, maybe they tell you all the time. They love you. They need you. They want you. They want what's best for you too. Your job isn't a job. It's a purpose. And it's a grand one. It's a great one. And I'm so happy you chose this journey. And I'm so happy that you know you're loved, you're appreciated, we're grateful for you, you're beautiful, you're strong, you're a superhuman that's a regular human being as well. And I thank you. Salute to every mother, salute to every single mom, and salute to everyone that may not have had a mom. I salute everyone on this great Mother's Day of 2020. Once again, I pray that you received all the love you needed from yourself and from others. And I love you guys. You guys have a great day and great night. And Mother's Day is every day. And appreciate your day. Love you. Bye.